I feel like I've never been like on sync with you before in my life, except today. This is the first. There was no delay. There was nothing. It was.
Oh my God. We're so insane.
Beautiful. Love it. So we watched One Piece this week. We actually watched it this week.
For the second time, yeah. In fact. Mm-hmm. Not that the people would know that.
Imagine we did a double release. I hope not.
Never. It's a waste of content. Gotta drip it out.
Mm-hmm. Can't
so it's just the
people.
Two of us, though.
Yeah. Life gets in the way as per usual.
Mm-hmm.
Life is so OP, bro. It's
tragic, but life is so One Piece.
Oh.
I didn't realize you were that ingrained in the culture now.
Life is so One Piece, bro. Like, everywhere you look, it's a One Piece reference. Piracy up in Somalia, no One Piece reference. Governments toppling over the oppressed, One Piece reference. The 1%, a One Piece reference. It's all connected, man.
You know, it used to be that everything was a JoJo reference.
Yeah, and despite the author being probably a vampire, as many of us suspect, you know, the world has just shifted. In reality, I think JoJo's Bizarre Adventure might be a One Piece reference.
Whoa. So anyway, you want to read the summary? Yeah, I'm going to go home and I'm going to marinate on that.
Okay, so I read it a little bit, but I read it in your voice because you wrote it. One, it's really good. Very well written. So, like, I'll read it if you want me to, but just know, like last time, I'm going to mess this up for you.
Oh, that's the charm.
All right.
And also it gives me a reason to hate more.
You don't have enough hate. You're stocking it up.
I'm trying.
All right, here we go. This week on Run Piece. Wait, what do you mean we're done running? Luffy's already at the boss room? I thought this was supposed to happen for like another 3 weeks. Who came up with this joke? Run Piece barely lasted a month. I was ready to dig in for at least the next three at minimum. Ugh. All right. Well, I guess that's that then. We'll just move on to the actual plot now. Rebecca has a run-in with her old pal Diamante and quickly gets overwhelmed. But before he can put the final blow on her, Kiros flies in for the save, having climbed up Barto's massive bear staircase as fast as his little leg could carry him. Luffy and Law are not so far behind, however, and the handoff of Law's key is finally made, freeing them up to go straight to the boss room. On the way there, though, they run into a poor, helpless girl who just doesn't want to be left alone in this big old scary place. She offers the pair some of her grapes, but as soon as she goes to adorably hand the fruit over, she suddenly screams and passes out. Without asking even a single question about what just happened, the boys take the Gum Gum Express right to Doflamingo's throne room and prepare themselves for battle. We're finally back to One Piece, baby!
Woo! One Piece!
Woo! Plot progression! Woo! Let's go, baby!
No more filler-ish bullshit.
Okay, so there's two things I want to point out.
Maybe.
One, you know, to us, as content creators going retroactively through the show, who watch three episodes a week, give or take, it wasn't that long. It didn't feel that long, right? But imagine you're any one of the people back in 2015, 2016, that were watching this shit week to week. Imagine months.
Awful.
At least 3 months going from, I think, probably like the Where did this plot even start? The Colosseum? Yeah, let's say it starts at the Colosseum. Imagine taking 3 months from the Colosseum to run up to Doflamingo's throne room.
Yeah.
Which is why I think we're having a generally better experience than the average viewer, I think, potentially.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. It's realistically been 12 to 15 episodes since Run Piece kicked off. So again, like you said, for us, really not a huge deal because we get through that in, you know, a couple of weeks worth of recordings. But for the poor people back then who are watching week to week, that's, you know, that's like, that's a third of their year gone dedicated to mostly nonsense.
And to think this is what spawned One Piece.
Yeah, allegedly. Like, maybe there's more filler ish nonsense to be had, stretching of the timeline.
Nothing I can remember.
I don't know.
I think we got through.
I don't blame them.
I blame them. They know what they did. But also, the second thing I wanted to point out, you wrote here about Kuros's little leg. Bro, there is nothing little about that leg. That is some meat on a bone type of like dinosaur meat, all right? That dude built. He beefy. USDA grade A, all right?
Oh, I mean, yeah, he has to be because if he's using his one leg to balance on, obviously he needs to have very well-centered, well-built. tree trunk for a leg in order to be able to do that. It's also astounding that, you know, most of the time in anime, when a swordsman, especially, or any martial artist really gets a limb cut off, a leg or an arm, there's like an intense training arc where they have to relearn essentially how to fight because their center of balance is off or techniques need to change. Now, not Kuros. Kuros is just takes it on the chin and goes, all right, I'm fine. This is fine. I'm the one-legged swordsman now. It's no big deal. I'm still good. I still fall. No problem whatsoever. No training arc needed. Skip that bullshit. Go right to still being overpowered as a swordsman. Maybe not overpowered, but still being strong as a swordsman. I just thought it was funny.
God, his quads, man. His quads.
One day that'll be me.
Honestly, Sam. If I have defined calves, surely by like some rule I'm going to make up in my head, I'll eventually get clearly defined quads too, right? Like that's just, you're just working your way up little by little. For sure.
Absolutely.
All right. So where do we want to start? Where do you want to start? Anything peeking out your interests?
I mean, there's not too many events that we go through. There's really like two to three. I think three. There's like three major scenes that we go through over the course of three episodes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I suppose we just start with the sunflower field because that's kind of where a majority of the first and second episode happen. Mm-hmm. Where Rebecca finally gets up there, lands with the help of the flying beetle squad, the Cub squad, and immediately parts ways with Leo because Leo is going to go look for Princess Mancheri, which, by the way, I think last time we kind of failed to potentially hit on something between the relationship of Leo and Princess Mancheri, which is that Leo like might be her brother.
Oh, why'd you pick that? Because I missed that entirely.
Well, there's the scene towards the end of one of the episodes where we finally get a look at her as she's trapped in the little cubby hole, the little Tontata cubby hole in the back of the chapel, and she's crying. But then she mutters Leo's name, or she might even say, like, please help me, Leo, or something to that effect. I forget exactly now, but she mentions him by name. So maybe they're just like good friends. Leo has already shown himself to be one of the foremost Tontatas. I don't know if you want to call him a commander or not. I guess that really fell on Kuros. But in terms of leadership roles in the Tontatas, Leo is high up. So maybe that's just her hoping that the her favorite Tontata friend will come and save her. But I'm going to go on a limb and say that Leo's actually her brother instead.
Well, all right. If I could make a comment one way or the other, I won't. So
that's totally fine. I just wanted to put it out there.
So either a good headcanon and or good observation. We'll figure that out.
Leo fucks off and we'll see him in like 3 weeks, probably.
Probably. I do have a question for you.
Okay.
It probably would have been more topical to bring it up last week, but with Mancheri being held captive, and I'm pretty sure Viola mentioned somewhat offhandedly that we don't need to worry about anything bad happening to her because Doflamingo values her so much. And so I'm curious if you have any thoughts about that. Like, what could her value be? Like, surely, like, let's assume she has, like, a special skill or something like that, right? Like, maybe she has knowledge or whatever the case is, right? Something that he finds valuable. If she didn't, he could have killed her and the Tontatas in the Smile Factory would have been none the wiser, correct? Like, they could have just kept lying and, like, her being alive or not wouldn't truly have had any impact on their, like, operation, right? Is that a fair assessment to make? Absolutely. Okay. So I'm glad we're on the same page there. So now it leaves me wondering, what does she offer Doflamingo potentially that he's like, you're worth keeping around?
It's a good question. I do remember what you're talking about, and I remember giving it some slight bit of thought at the time. My only conclusion is what she doesn't have, and my assumption is that she doesn't have some kind of special devil fruit. Because otherwise she would have just been killed. Doflamingo seemingly knows how to manipulate maybe devil fruits and like maybe knows about how devil fruits respawn and how they like potentially go to like the nearest fruit Mm-hmm. I'm mostly basing this off of the fact that he just magically has the flare fruit.
Yeah.
I guess that's maybe slightly unfair because it's been 2 years since Ace died. But mm-hmm. I'm guessing that someone like Doflamingo maybe has that knowledge in general also. So my guess is that it's not a devil fruit. It's got something to do with maybe some Tontata specific power that, I don't know, maybe is passed down through the royal bloodline.
Ooh,
and okay. But like it would be different from like how we had the fishman and what's her face was Neptune.
Yeah, yeah, I feel you.
But that was like specifically that was one of these three legendary weapons. So it's not, I don't think it's that. I think it's some other facet to being a Tontata that she just holds, like she holds this power or whatever. Or maybe it's like it gets you into a specific area, like you can't open a super secret Tontata door unless Princess Mancherie says the magic word or something like that. I don't know. Okay. Something along those lines.
I like the idea of it being exactly like Poseidon. What's her actual name?
Poseidon.
What's her actual name? Mermaid lady.
Shirahoshi.
Shirahoshi, thank you. What if it's exactly like Shirahoshi and she's just like, if she's not an ancient weapon in of herself, she just like has like a super secret connection. Not secret, but like she may not be the weapon, but like the weapon doesn't operate without her. You catch my drift?
Yeah.
What if it's like that? I think that'd be kind of cool. Just like different races have like their own ancient weapon kind of thing.
I think it'd be cool, but maybe if it wasn't one of these ancient weapons though, because then we'd be going back to back arcs of this, you know, or like at least really recently. It's okay. Not technically back to back because we had Punk Hazard, but like the recency between Fishman Island and this seems like it's too close together is my point that okay. They're like, why would we do the same plot thing over again? So I'm going to guess it's probably not specifically one of these ancient weapons.
Fair enough. So cover that. To good talk. Back to the flower field. So shout to Barto, as always, coming in clutch, the MVP of the arc.
Hell yeah.
Forever and always, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think anyone's usurping him at this point. I'm sorry, Law. Anyway, so...
You're going to catch some flack for that one.
So they're down on the plateau or whatever, and they're still being, you know, attacked by Gladius and the Nutcrackers, which I have a gripe about those. I'll get through in a second. And so Barto's like, hey, like you got to follow Rebecca up there. You got to get to like the final boss. I got you. He takes his barrier, manipulates the shape where he forms a staircase that goes like 2 miles long from where they're standing up to the flower fields cliff side. And we find out naturally that Barto can only really make one barrier more or less. And he's using it to make a staircase. So he's essentially defenseless. Luckily, we have a bunch of allies to one, protect Barto, to make sure he keeps his fingers crossed, and also more or less keep Luffy safe as he runs up the staircase. Any thoughts there?
He's a homie. Mm-hmm. We learn that he has a certain, maybe not necessarily that he can only make one barrier, but he has like a certain amount of barrier energy he can use. We've only ever seen him make one barrier, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he describes it is that he has a battery essentially that he depletes and can use for the barriers. And so it sounds like in theory he could make multiple barriers if he wants. He just hasn't before, mm-hmm. as far as I can remember. And the staircase just depleted his entire storage of barrier energy, which, by the way, is a massive amount. Mm-hmm. If he can truly make multiple barriers and he has, and that's his limit, like the staircase is all of his energy, he can make so many barriers. He can make one giant dome and no one would ever be able to touch him ever. He could just walk around forever untouchable unless somebody comes from underground or something. That's wild. Like we talked about how Law has an energy bank for his rooms and that being seemingly endless, but now he's replenished that because he got a break and he got carried everywhere, literally. So he has his energy stores back, but Bartos is like is massive also. Like that's an insane amount of barrier energy that he just has that he can use. So I do appreciate being given finally like a little bit of limitation on what he can do, because otherwise it's just been him throwing up barriers willy-nilly no matter what's happening, because he just seemingly had an infinite storage of barrier. So now having a little bit of knowledge on what exactly are his limitations is kind of nice.
I just love how committed he is despite not having a barrier, where he literally just eats a bunch of shrapnel from Gladius, like just straight to the chest.
Yeah.
God bless Barto. We don't deserve him, but I love him.
Yeah. And Cabbage is like, dude, what the fuck? Why didn't you just put up a barrier? And he's like, and then he explains his whole thing about how he can't make any more because he's used up his energy. But and then my favorite part is that Cabbage like looks up the stairs and is like staring wistfully at Straw Hat Luffy as he runs up the stairs. And I'm like, what is this moment that we're having right now? Like, and then he decides to stay behind because he's going to fight off the puppets that hurt Farrell. So
as he should.
Now he's gotten out of the plot. As he should, to be fair. That is true. I would do it too if I was in his position. That's my buddy right there.
That's a homie for real. Homie for life. He didn't deserve to go out like that. They did him dirty.
I mean, he's not dead.
I don't know, he's man.
Fine. Ultimately, he's fine.
He got big chomped.
Yeah, but he's fine. Did you see what happened to Moosey earlier? Like a couple weeks ago, like Moosey got shit stomped over and over again.
He caught a couple bullets to the chest, but he ate though, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like all Farrell got a little nibble to the dome piece, and that's it. That's he'll walk it off. Just a tiny nibble, just a little off the top. That's all. The barber went a little too far. It's fine.
The barber sneezed. You know, accidents happen.
Yeah, now all we got to do is even it out. It'll be fine. And look, it's hair. It grows back.
You know, I'm actually supposed to get a haircut tomorrow, and I feel like I'm putting some real negative energy out in the world right now.
Oh, no.
I might quick, just consider doing this at
cross
home.
Your fingers and find a four-leaf clover.
I don't have grass. Where's the grass? Someone help me touch grass.
And it's cold outside.
Oh, no, the grass is dead. All right, cool. So we have that scene. We cut back to Rebecca landing on the flower field. She's like, all right, cool. I made it. Her, Leo, and I'm pretty sure there's someone else there. I just couldn't remember who. Some other Jontada, right?
Right. The little cub one. One.
I wish I could remember his name. My bad, Beetle dude. But Leo and his friend, they're like, hey, glad you made it to the plateau on your own safely. Cool. We're going to go save our princess. You stay easy. So they run off. Rebecca's just kind of like chilling. She's like, all right, I'm here. I did my part. I just got to wait for the others. And then you just see Diamante spawning out of the bushes like the camper he is, which I think the visual aesthetic of these sunflower fields are like pretty tall compared to like a human size. And Diamante is just towering over them. And I'm just here like, I don't know what it was, but something about that was really funny to me. And so he literally rises up from the earth. And he's like, hey, long time no see, Rebecca. How you doing? I'm gonna kill you now. And so we get some like real psychological horror going down as he chases her down, hits her with his sword on her back. He gets her basically in a corner and he's like, all right, you ready for the final blow? Wait, I think we would prefer a gun so you can go out just like your mom. Savage line, by the way. Massive, oh, like plus God. 20 psychological damage. When she looked at him, I think from my perspective, it looked like she just learned that. She's like, wait, that's how my mom died? And I'm like, oh, no.
Double damage.
Actually. And then thankfully, Kyros comes in with a quick save with the utmost discrimination toward Diamante, as he should. And so he's holding him back. I can't wait. I cannot wait to see Kyros absolutely shit stomp Diamante.
Is he, though?
You know what? Honestly, there's a strong possibility Kyros goes down here, which will make me upset. But I'm hoping in the in-between, I just get some type of satisfaction. I don't know, man.
I mean, Kyros is seemingly putting up a good fight and has pushed back Diamante a couple times. But Diamante is also not utilizing his devil fruit whatsoever right now. Outside of the two times he uses it on his sword. So, but to fight Kiro specifically, he has not used it yet. So once Diamante decides he's going to get serious and like actually begin using some techniques, then I don't know how Kiro's does here. Maybe we get some kind of father-daughter tag team on Diamante action, but I don't know. Even that feels weak to me because I don't know what Rebecca does. Rebecca doesn't do anything.
Rebecca feels like a human shield at best, and at that point, she's getting in the way. You know what I mean?
She's kind of useless in this fight a little bit. So
yeah, she admitted it. She's like, yeah, I'm no match for this guy. I got to run and stall.
Yeah, she's like, she drops the key at one point and she looks at it and remembers that this is mainly her purpose here and not fighting Diamante, despite the fact that she wants to try and give him a round or two. Not happening. So she starts running away. Diamante gets pissed. That's when she gets pinned down. Finally, it's fine. Unfortunately was always going to be Rebecca's fate since the beginning of the arc. Like there was no way she was ever going to end up being a serious fighting contender, especially with the way she fights and was taught to fight. So I
hear annoying. A little bit of disdain in that voice of yours, Christian. I hear the Kirby main hater in the back.
I'm still getting flashbacks from the Colosseum arc. I don't want to relive those days, but I mean
she has a really, really large edge to guard. Like if that guy falls off of that, like he's done for. That's all I'm saying.
The problem is that the platform is so huge, like to lead him over there would take a lot of work, I guess. Maybe that's how they do it. Kiro lures him over to the edge and then Rebecca pulls one move. Oh God, that would piss me off so much. I'm not going to lie to you. I am pretty angry about this, and it's I don't even know if it's going to happen. Just imagining that scene is beginning to make my blood boil. I'm so upset. This is the worst timeline, and it hasn't even happened.
Oh, that's great.
God, it better not happen. Oh, fuck me. I'm going to be thinking about that for the next like 2 weeks until that fight is finally resolved.
While Kiros is holding off Diamante, Luffy and Law run up the staircase. They grab the key from Rebecca. They have this kind of cool scene. I mean, is it cool? It was kind of cool. So Luffy grabs the key from Rebecca, but then him and Law get eaten by the toy soldier, and we're supposed to like get this super tense, dramatic moment of like, oh no, they got eaten. It's over. It's too late. And meanwhile, you're just there like, all right, come on, guys. We're stalling at this point. We don't need a path for this kind of time. And so the shackles fall off of Law. He uses his room, slices this toy soldier up real good, like, and we'll just watch it fall off the cliffside. And so they, you know, Diamante tries to intervene. Law says, "Room, get the fuck out of my face."
All this is utter nonsense, by the way.
Is it?
Like, nix the fact that they get swallowed by the tin soldier. Like, what realistically happens there? They're in its mouth. They get swallowed. Now they're just sitting in a giant tin can. Nothing happens to them in reality there. The only way something actually happens to them is if the tin can starts chewing, but they're already fully in its mouth. There's no damage to be done there. So that already is like, whatever, who cares? You're supposed to view this scene from Rebecca's perspective.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter. We know they're fine. Mm-hmm, secondly, the fact that we get Law's cuffs off here is even more bullshit because of the struggle that we had back when the palace, back in the palace when we first saved Law. Like, Luffy and Viola was there. Like, neither of them wanted to touch the cuffs to be able to unlock the keys. Law didn't do it himself. It had to be Luffy. But before, Luffy had geriatric hands and couldn't stop shaking and couldn't put the fucking key in the hole of the cuffs. Now, while flying through the air, getting swallowed by a giant tin can in the dark, can find the keyhole of the cuffs and Law's free. What are you what is happening? What? This is bullshit.
You know, I just got to say, as Devin's advocate, you are bringing a certain amount of Devin energy to this podcast tonight, and it is greatly appreciated. I just want you to know that.
Ah, I spilled water.
while he's bringing
a certain level of clumsy ass energy.
Yeah, it's how's the best of us. So yeah, they zip up to the poolside area right below the throne room. Luffy's like, all right, time to run it down mid. And Law's like, this is how we lose the game. And he's like, what are you talking about? Just don't miss, forehead. And he's like, you need to use your two brain cells, man. He's like, brain cells, brain schmell. All right, like, I just punch him in the face real good. We're easiest shit of my life. And while they're having this debate, Sugar decides, she gets them in her sight. She's like, all right, time to play innocent little fawn. Oh, woe is me. Time to put on a show for the rest of us. And while that's happening, because she plans to just turn them into toys, right? Kind of just GG from there. And also, we learned that Law doesn't know about, he doesn't know who Sugar is. I guess he left the crew before she came on board and all that, yada, yada, yada.
It has been like a number of years, right?
It has.
I forget the exact timeline, but
I was a little surprised by this. I guess I shouldn't be, considering, like, granted, Law didn't show up in the scene where we get that flashback of Doflamingo attacking Dressrosa initially. But I was still kind of surprised by it for one reason or another. Anyway, so while that's happening, we cut back to the plateau across the way where we got Usopp, Kanjuro, Kinemon, and all the other goons. And Usopp is collaborating with Kanjuro here. Is like, hey, I need you to make me something. And we don't know what it is yet, but he finishes it up and Usopp makes it super special.
Yeah. My favorite is in 695, there's a flashback of like a couple of different scenes. And one of them is Usopp like over Kanjuro's shoulder. And my first thought was, is Usopp giving Kanjuro painting lessons, like just to make him a better painter? Because Usopp has shown to be like pretty adept at least at that. So my first thought was, is that what's happening here? Because that would be hilarious. Like,
we're just taking an art lesson break real quick.
And we're literally just like the people are climbing up Kanjuro's ladder and we're just taking an art break, lesson break.
I mean,
but it turns out it's this other thing.
To be fair, that wouldn't be the most like egregious thing in terms of like it being an isolated moment, because if I think I have the same scene in my mind, we get a montage of like what's happening across the land with everybody, right? And we cut to Frankie versus Senior Pink again, and they're just B-boy dance battling for some reason. They're both doing headspins or whatever the proper term is here.
Yeah,
and it's so funny. I love it. I don't know what's happening in there, and I don't care. I want more of it.
Yeah. Oh my God. I don't care. If we keep cutting back to them and they're just having nonsensical fights like a dance battle or like a rap battle, or they're playing rock, paper, scissors, that would be great. Like, if we just get more of that, that would be awesome.
Absolutely. Usopp finishes his special ammunition called Bagworm or whatever. This is some big, meaty rocket of some sort, some anti-tank munition. And so he goes to line up his shot with the help of Viola. She's using her clairvoyance. Also, she just has like a naturally good aptitude for like measurements. She's like, yeah, Sugar's about like 2 meters away from the guy. She's closing in. She's standing in front of this window. It has 6 bars horizontal, 1 vertical. The window panes are about 40 by 50 centimeters. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. Is this part of the power? You just get like a ruler in your like mind when you look at everything.
Yeah.
And so Usopp with his new goggles, which I don't like. I really like his old ones. I'm not a fan of the red tint. Also, lack of a scope apparatus, I guess. I don't know. I guess like a crosshair in there.
Apparently, it's built in now.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't feeling it. But anyway, Usopp goes to line up his shot, and he is feeling the heat, feeling the pressure. And he's like, yo, I can't take the shot. And then he tries again, because Viola's like, hey, man, you really got to do this. We got to focus up, even though she needs to focus up more. But anyway, The broom patrol, as I call them, is climbing up the platform. They're like inches away from like, you know, capturing them. And this is a really cool scene, by the way, in my mind. So Usopp has this dream sequence. We don't know about it until it breaks, but he has this dream sequence where he tries to take the shot and he misses. And then you just see sugar touched Luffy, turned him into a toy, and you just think the worst has happened. I don't know about anybody else, but like, I got immersed in that scene. Like, I really thought that scene happened. I'm like, oh my, I don't remember this. Oh my gosh, she got Luffy, and now like, I'm sitting there wondering, he's like, what's Usopp gonna do? Like, he doesn't remember Luffy now. Like, does this matter? Does he like suddenly not remember why he's even like taking the shot? Like, what happens? And then it's a whole dream sequence in his mind, and I'm like, whoa, that could have been bad. And so he buckles up, he goes to try and take the shot for real this time with Viola's help. But also, we get an interesting moment inside Usopp's mind where he suddenly is able to sense the aura of Law, Luffy, and Sugar despite the, like, you know, miles of distance. And so I'm curious if you have any thoughts about what happened there.
It just seems like he's unlocked observation hockey. To me.
I agree.
I think that is pretty plain. If it's anything else, then it's some other magic bullshit we haven't been introduced to yet. Maybe the Usopp family line just has this ability and we are just becoming privy to it. But it seems pretty clear that he's unlocked observation hockey from this high stress situation that he's found himself in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I agree. I assume you like this, obviously, but are you like excited about it, or is it more just like, you know what? Yeah, he probably should have this. You know, he's a sniper.
I mean, I'm excited at a base level because it makes Usopp's character at least a little more interesting rather than just being a normal guy who with a slingshot that can go big mode. Now he at least has, and to this point, he's really only trained up his bag of tricks, mm-hmm. and with all the plants and the things that he's gathered over time to be able to use as ammunition. And in a similar way, it was also the idea that he's trained his physical body at least a little bit,
mm-hmm.
to sort of withstand damage or be a little bit stronger physically. But now he has this other facet of himself with the observation hockey that he could potentially train up and make himself even more useful, which I can appreciate. I can always appreciate having a power up that makes sense and fits the character well. So I am tentatively excited to see in what direction this takes Usopp's character, or power level wise, maybe, mm-hmm. if we get to see more of him utilizing this to actually do cooler sniper things, or if this will just kind of get relegated, hopefully not, but if this will get relegated as just like another thing, like everyone's got observation hockey, like what makes you so special now? So I hope it becomes a focus at least a little bit. If not, I could see them maybe using it once or twice more in this arc specifically, just because now he's discovered the power. So if we use it more here, it would make the most sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope that it doesn't just fall to the wayside going forward and that we actually develop this a little bit more. The same way I hope that we get more of Brook's powers at some point. Like, I know he's off on the ship and just kind of sidelined by the plot right now until we come back to whatever Big Mom does to their ship.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope we get some more observation hockey out of Usopp so that this isn't just like a one-off thing.
I agree and share the exact same sentiments as you. What I want to add is that this opens the door for Usopp to have Conqueror's hockey. And I'm pushing this agenda all the way to the end, baby.
Does it?
Absolutely.
I don't think that's true. That feels like a leap in logic.
Here's my, I guess, not exactly headcanon, theory, if you will, whatever you want to call it. Here's what I'm thinking. And Brendan, if you're out there, I hope you support me in this from the ether. So Usopp's goal is to be a brave warrior of the sea, right? And that's like a little vague. Like, we get it, but like that can be interpreted and illustrated in so many ways, right? You can get crazy with it. It's open-ended. I think, one, primarily, it would be really funny, but two, really interesting for Usopp's character if after the course of however long the series is going to take, Usopp just progressively either like gets a little braver or stronger or whatever, or he, you know, has a his own little arc to himself, you know, like this is Usopp's arc. Like, we're going to take a good chunk of the plot for whatever island we're on at this moment to dedicate to Usopp, where he just, like, I don't know, maybe he meets another giant or something, and he just gets, like, proper training of, like, how to fight or, like, what it means to, like, be brave and things like that. And in a very goofy way, because I think this is in the same, like, in the proper spirit of One Piece. In a very goofy way, I think it would be cool if Usopp got Conqueror's Haki, where he's like, it's like, he's still kind of like a feeble coward, or like he presents himself as a, like, maybe he's still like shaking at his, in his boots or whatever, but he's truly, truly harnessing like the spirit of what a brave warrior of the sea looks like or is, right? And he actually just gets Conqueror's Haki, he knocks a bunch of people out. I think that would be awesome.
I can agree that if Usopp got Conquerors, it would be quintessential goofy One Piece shenanigans. However, I don't think we're gonna end up with Usopp Conquerors Haki. This is like this is like one of those things that they always reserve for like a serious thing, a serious moment or character. So I don't really see Usopp ending up with Conqueror's Haki.
I hear what you're saying.
I'm gonna...
But he's God Usopp, bro. If everyone needs Conqueror's Haki, he's got to be God, all right?
But if he's God, like, shouldn't people should just be listening to him in general?
That's what the Conqueror's Haki is for. Like, he literally, like, makes people bow at their feet. And in this case, it's just passing out, you know? They are overwhelmed in the presence of God Usopp. I think you see the picture I'm painting here. It's hilarious. And it's honestly the primary function of this for me. Does he need to ever use it in combat? Give him, like, once, right? But I'm just here for a gag at the rest of, after that point. I think it would be awesome.
Right.
And I'm running
like
with this.
He gets it one day and then it's a serious moment. But every time after that, it's him, like, I don't know, getting Sanji to like do kneel before him or something stupid.
Oh my God. Yes. Anytime we get to an island, there's just like a insert replacement for Tontata equivalent. And he just Conqueror Haki. So I was like, yeah, I'm Usopp, the brave warrior of the sea. Look at my Conqueror's heart, Haki. Kneel before me. A little less aggressive than that. He's just flexing on them, you know? And then, you know, he meets like some big bad guy and he's like, oh, I have seemed to run out of Conqueror's Haki. I have used all my energy. Someone save me. I think it's great.
Right.
This is a
sure.
Thing.
Sure.
So Usopp seemingly unlocks Observation Haki, takes a shot, knocks out Sugar again with an illustration brought to us by Conjuro of his face. How do you feel?
I can't believe that we've doubled down on knocking Sugar out with Usopp's stupid face. Unbelievable that we've done this twice. My favorite part is that Usopp doesn't even really know that Sugar is traumatized now by, well, his face or long things in general. He's just going off of what worked the first time. It's less imposing than the first time because also he was breathing fire and everything was going wrong for that guy then. So it was much more frightening at that point, but it doesn't matter anymore because Sugar has this fear of long objects. And now there's a head with three of them flying at her like some kind of fucked up Triceratops Usopp. And it knocks her out. She falls unconscious again. And then the bagworm that is just this visage of Usopp slams into the wall of the palace and turns into a painting again. And Law and Luffy don't see a damn thing. The Usopp visage flies by. Sugar falls to the ground screaming and passes out. And all of those guards come over and start screaming, "Sugar, Sugar! Oh my God, she's fallen unconscious again!" And Law and Luffy just look at each other and shrug. And then Luffy launches them up. I like that. So my only question is, like, does Law not only didn't know about Sugar or what Sugar looked like, but does he not know that Sugar exists at all?
That's what it seems like. Like, he had, this is just a little random little girl to him. He's just like, get away from me, child.
Yeah. And the name Sugar means nothing to him. He has no idea that this is an executive.
That is the part that, like, blows me out of the water. I'm like, okay, you not meeting her understandable, right? She could have come in after you left, but you don't even recognize the name. Like, you didn't hear about her. Like, all after all of the snail chat calls of like, Sugar's got this OP power. We got to stop Sugar. We got to stop Sugar. We got Sugar this, Sugar that. You didn't hear any of that, man? Like, not even a single time ever?
It's either he's really not privy to this information, or in this moment where she's already dealt with, he was like, whatever. Like, it's not a problem anymore. He just doesn't comment on it. So I'm only left to believe that Law didn't know Sugar in any capacity whatsoever. Obviously, Luffy doesn't. He's an idiot hasn't really even spoken to anybody in particular that knew Sugar. So Luffy's not going to know. It was just a little surprising that he didn't even... There wasn't even a moment where Law goes a little wide-eyed and is like, oh, fuck, that was Sugar? That could have been really bad. And then they leave. Nope, don't get it. They just... scoot right on out of there up to where Doflamingo was sitting. And so that was like, that took me a step back, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess he just had no clue whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Very jarring, but you know, it happened apparently. Very, very weird, very odd. But yeah, from there, they just, as you wrote, Gum Gum Express up into the throne room, and they're ready for the final battle. It's a pretty cool scene, I think. Just the face off and Doflamingo being like, before we get things started, what are you two here for again? And they're like, we're here to kick your ass. He's like, how disappointing. And what I want to ask is, did you notice anything like that stood out to you in that scene before I bring it up?
You mean what's his face's body just lying in front of Doflamingo?
Yeah, Bellamy is just under Doflamingo's foot at his seat.
I didn't see specifically if Doflamingo was like resting his foot on him, but I did see that Bellamy's... body was just, Bellamy's body is sitting, lying face down at the foot of Doflamingo's throne. So yeah, I did see that. I imagine, I don't know. I want to say that Bellamy is unconscious there. Mm-hmm. And then this is going to piss Luffy. I almost said Lucy. This is going to piss Luffy off and going to cause him to totally disregard Law's advice of like, think before you act. But at the same time, I have this worry in the back of my head that, because we talked about this a couple weeks ago when Bellamy first makes his way to Doflamingo, I'm really, really worried that Bellamy might still fight for Doflamingo, even though not... I think I'm weighing more in the idea still that Bellamy is over it now.
Uh-huh.
But there's still that sneaking suspicion in the back of my head that's like, what if Bellamy still hasn't been beaten enough times to get this through to him? So I don't know. We'll find out. Maybe next week, I guess.
We'll find out probably next week. We're getting real close to, what did I say a couple weeks ago? Like, I'm excited for 700. I think it's like,
yes,
directly after 700 is the part I'm looking forward to. So that's like, what, 2-3 weeks? I think it's 2. I think I'm good at math.
Oh, actually. Okay, wait. Yes, that is math. Because next week we'll do episode 700. I had a different thought.
Go on.
On this. What if, because I think, maybe not. What I was going to say was, I think Doflamingo has some sort of idea that Bellamy and Luffy are like kind of okay with each other now. Uh-huh. But I guess it doesn't even, for the scenario I'm like cooked up in my head, it doesn't even necessarily need to be the case. And what I've thought of just now was that Bellamy maybe doesn't even have to be conscious, but Doflamingo will use parasite strings on Bellamy's body and have him fight Luffy.
How
whether he's conscious or unconscious.
Ooh, inexplicably evil, yes. Very Doflamingo coded.
I like this. Very Doflamingo. Yeah.
I guess we'll find out soon enough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the only other thing that really happened was we actually cut back to Sabo and the Navy for real this week. And they're just... Sabo versus Isho, really. And they're continuing to throw the hands. Isho finally gets serious for some reason. He was holding back, and Sabo calls him out on it. He was like, oh, you know, I need people to go easy on me. And he's like, I don't discriminate. Rated E for everyone. And he's like, well, all right, sonny boy. And gives him the what's what. Granted, Logia is OP, so like Sabo doesn't really get hurt. But he's like, wow, this guy just like threw gravity at me in a horizontal radius. And wow. And then he just kind of like human torches his way to Isho, and they're just kind
of If I was anyone else, this would have been a problem.
Yeah, if I hadn't won that tournament and eaten their Dover, I might be dead. But, you know, really nothing's happening here except just really cool visuals. Just more of a, we save the city! As Sabo sends up a plume of fire toward the sky. And I'm just here like, bro, how is there anything left of the city, particularly in this particular area?
Yeah, multiple times have both of them mutilated the nearby buildings and ground as a whole because Isho uses that gravity beam something tiger and just sends this horizontal column of gravity force at him, and it bends the buildings around it. And then also, like you said, Sabo's just sending fiery explosions one after another that damage everything except Isho. Isho is completely unharmed in this entire endeavor, which is like, I don't know what's happening there. I don't know if he's making a small gravity field around himself to not get hit by fire, whatever.
I think so. At least for one
we
move
want
in
to
particular.
Justify with it.
In one move in particular, Sabo throws a fire fist, quite literally, and Isho, he deflects it in some capacity. I'm pretty sure it was like gravity related. And so he just kind of like sends it flying upward, and then he just kind of explodes like a firecracker. Just far more explosive and destructive in that sense. But yeah, I'm pretty sure Isho is just anti-gravitying this fire away. You know, he's like, well, all that oxygen, float up there and explode up there. Leave me alone.
Yeah. So I appreciate checking back in, I guess, that it's still happening, but like,
it's
if
cool.
It's just going to keep ending like this in these stalemates, it's cool. Don't get me wrong, watching Sabo utilize the flare fruit in a much more destructive capacity than we ever really saw Ace do it, but that's because Ace was kind of relegated out of the plot until he was the plot. So
Ace really
there was
only
never really
got
an opportunity
one
to see him
moment
that much
to shine, and it was on Bonnaroo Island when he 1v1 Blackbeard. And granted, there wasn't much to destroy. It was like a saloon, and that's about it in that town. But when he threw his like fiery spirit bomb looking thing at Blackbeard, and granted, we cut away, you know, whatever. But I'm assuming that fucks some shit up. You know, that's all I'm gonna say.
I'm sure. But we didn't see it on screen, so it didn't happen. Oh, we're seeing Sabo now.
Yeah.
And that's fine by me.
Ace got disrespected. That's all I'm going to say here. Got dealt dirty. But I think we covered everything, right? Anything lingering in your mind?
Not really. We do not go over a whole lot of scenes in this episode. Like I said, three main ones between Usopp, Doflamingo. Well, not even really Doflamingo, but the flower field and then Luffy Law with Sugar. Those are kind of your big three of the episodes in terms of what happens. And so and it kind of rolls by fairly quickly. I got through the episodes without really thinking much about it. Didn't feel like a drag.
Yep. Everything was, I was actually surprised by the last episode. I feel like you really tidied everything up rather well and rather quickly in terms of like the scene with Usopp got dealt with rather quickly, a lot quicker than I remember, which is cool. And then just setting the scene of our final battle here for the most part, well established in these three episodes. But with that being said, next week is 698 to episode 700. I don't fully remember the episode number we're on currently in like time of recording. I want to say we're like pretty close to 1100. But we're not so far away from from catching up to modern times, I think. You know, like, you know, if we were still at episode 1000, right? That's only like 300 episodes. Maybe that's like, you know, I won't say more. I might be almost doing a spoiler, but you know, that's like considering how fast we go through these arcs and through these episodes, you know, it's not a whole lot. You know what I mean? We're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, we got, if the show were to halt right now, we'd still have like two and a half years worth of episodes to go through. Mm-hmm. So, because 400 episodes and we get through three a week. So, or three recording at least, it still leaves like 100 recordings. So yeah, it's like 2 years or in change.
I just think it's funny that
there's still plenty of content.
I think it's funny that we're kind of sort of mimicking the manga anime relationship. We're like, we're catching up. Eventually, we're going to have to actually make filler of our own content. There's going to be some days. It will be some wild
days. That's a future
days.
Us problem, though.
Absolutely. That's a problem for when I'm 30, I think. But yeah, those are the episodes.
Scary.
Any quotes from you this week?
I have two quotes, I think. Yes, two quotes. So in 695, we get a brief scene of right after Barto jumps in front of the exploding things that are shot at him or shot at Luffy by Gladius. Mm-hmm. There's a scene of Barto fanboying and being like, I would die for Luffy. And then the quote I actually have written down was from Robin, who makes it a little bit more serious. And she goes, I know how you feel, Rooster Coon. Our captain is worth risking even our lives. And then a short while later, she says, Luffy is always the trump card that leads us to victory.
Very meta commentary.
And meta.
Yeah, she's like, she's not breaking the fourth wall, but it's like, yo, Luffy's the win con, always.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah. I think they all recognize this. I don't think this has to be a meta thing. I think everybody kind of recognizes that the formula is Luffy goes and fights the big bad guy and we fight the peons beneath them.
I don't know, man. It feels a little self-aware. Maybe that's just me.
Robin's got outside knowledge of the anime.
I thought you sniped me, actually. You are in very close proximity of my quote.
Oh. Luckily my next one is nowhere near that. So when we're on the Sunflower Plateau, Luffy takes a second to thank Rebecca for persevering and getting them the key. And then Rebecca calls after him because she's still referring to him as Lucy. Mm-hmm. And she asks him, I think, if he's going to beat Doflamingo. And Luffy responds with, I'm not Lucy. My name is Luffy, the man who will become the king of the pirates. Mm-hmm. So don't worry. And I wrote that down. Not only is it just like a nice moment because Rebecca has been looking up to him in general this entire time, but he gets to say the line for the first time in a little while, you know, I feel like it's been a minute since Luffy has given the king of the pirates line. So
I was a little,
I just wanted to call attention to it.
I was a little, I guess, like let down by him not saying his full name. I was like, all right, yeah, your name's Luffy, but like you're always Monkey D. Luffy, future king of the pirates. You know what I mean? It's like its whole like thing. I don't know. It felt like it's kind of out of character in a really weird way.
Felt like you got shortchanged.
Yeah. Like somehow they ran out of like an extra $2 of budget to add those three words. Well, that's
no
just
more
me
monkey
nitpicking. We ran out of monkey budget at this time.
No, we ran out of monkey budget. Oh, that's good. All right. Yeah, that's all my quotes.
Gotcha. So my first quote, though, is very close proximity to what you said. It's during this whole scene of Barto, risking himself for Luffy's sake. And so actually, is it before or after this? I don't remember. But at some point, Luffy says thank you to Barto. And Barto just enters a dream sequence. Where he sees like the gates of heaven or something, he's crying, and he says he tells him like, I should be thanking you for being born. And I thought that was great.
he's looking out over the most beautiful sunset you ever imagined.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And my other quote here is it's right around when Kuros makes a save for Rebecca. And he says the following: as a toy with no future, all I could do is teach you how to fight. Even though you're a gentle person like your mother, but it ends today. You don't have to fight anymore. And that was just a really tender moment that tugging my little heartstrings here.
Yeah.
That's all my nice. Goals. Moving on to Golden Ham. This is a... I think we have pretty good options here this week. Just, I don't know who to nail it down on.
I mean, I feel like I know who to nail it down on.
Who are you feeling?
I'm surprised you don't, honestly. If I feel this way, I'm surprised you don't feel this way.
I have a guy in my head, but who are you thinking?
I'm coming in here with Usopp.
I agree.
I think by far, really, there's no competitor to who did the most work in this episode's than Usopp. Because the next closest option, really, I mean, I'm always open to give it to Barto. And he actually does something this episode by making the stairs that get them to the sunflower field. But otherwise, it's really it. The best meme answer I got is Breakdancing Frankie, because otherwise there's really nothing left here, I think.
God, I would love to use that as our thumbnail, but I can't do Usopp dirty like this. But I know for the rest of time, I'm just gonna think about, like, damn, we could have had breakdancing Frankie break as our boy. Thumbnail.
Yeah.
Could have been it. But Usopp wins Golden Hand this week. Congratulations.
Who knows? Maybe they'll still be breakdancing next week.
Oh, I wish. I hope. A boy can dream. That's the best timeline, honestly. But yeah, we did that. Moving on to fan mail this week. We got a letter from listener Sam, and they write, have you guys ever listened to Japanese city pop music like Masayoshi Takanaka and T-Square? It's really reminiscent of early video game music and jazz fusion, and I thought y'all might be interested in it. Your recent fan mail segment about musical preferences had me wondering. Also, what are you wearing?
We just did this.
Did we though?
We did with the anniversary.
I haven't listened back to that.
So like 3 weeks ago. Go on.
I guess I'll start with what I'm wearing. As per usual, the stay-at-home dad look of white tank top and his boxers with some slides. Yeah.
You know, I think I'm half wearing what I was during the anniversary cast. I'm wearing the same sweats, I believe. They're my favorite maroon colored sweatpants, but I've got definitely a shirt. It's a different shirt, but definitely a shirt I've been caught wearing during one of these questions before. It's my NASA spoof shirt, but it says "Not flat, we checked." I've definitely been caught wearing this before. So in this combination, I don't remember now. We've been asked this question so many times. I'm sure there's been overlap at some point. But
wow, I can't believe you reuse your clothes, bro. What a peasant.
I know, crazy. I actually haven't washed it since the last time you caught me too. It's the crazy part. What was the first part of the email again? What was the music genre called?
Japanese city pop.
I definitely
pop.
Don't listen to it. City pop.
I do not listen to it. I have a friend of mine who's really into it. I've heard like, you know, a couple songs here and there. I can't name anything proper. But if like someone threw this on at like a house party, I think everybody would like be vibing. It's got like the right amount of energy. Not too high, not too low, at least from the stuff I've listened to, at least. It makes for great AMV music, I'll say that much.
I definitely believe that. Mm-hmm. I know I don't listen to this, but I can almost guarantee that if I went through my sister's Spotify, she listens to a lot of J and K-pop. So I would imagine there's a semi-decent bit of whatever artist. He listed a couple of artists too, or they listed a couple of artists too, right?
Masayoshi Takanaka and T-Square.
Yeah. You know, honestly, actually T-Square sounds very familiar. I'm pretty sure that's definitely somebody my sister has told me about. So
I Googled Masayoshi real quick.
My sister has told me.
Out of curiosity, I didn't look around that deep, but I saw a picture of this person. They have a guitar. I think they have like jazz fused music, and I love me some jazz. If you got a saxophone in there, I'm all in.
Yeah. Oh, I see that on T-Squared also.
Ooh, maybe we should do a little digging, come back next week, see what we find.
Time to investigate.
Mm-hmm. But thank you for email, Sam. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate everyone who sent us emails today in particular. There's a backlog for the first time in a while.
Let's go.
I was afraid of how many more we're gonna get in one day. I was like, well, something special, something the moon's aligned or something.
It's because the anniversary dropped today.
That's true. I gotta go listen. I can't wait to listen to that at work and just fucking laugh to myself in the corner because I know we said some absolute dumb shit.
It was pretty good.
But moving on to Patreon shout outs to Twigo, Taco, and Rin. We appreciate you. I think everything's been recorded. So far, only Oklahoma's been released. Iron Claw should be next on the docket, I believe. Assuming we release it in order of recording.
By the time this episode drops that you're listening to currently, at the very minimum, Iron Claw should be out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Crank.
Maybe.
Because there's one episode. I think Crank will be out. But either way, thank you. But actually, by the time you're listening to this, it's April and you've probably given us your next set of movie recommendations. So thanks for those, whatever they are.
Man, we're blowing through
especially
March,
you,
man.
Taco,
I can't believe it. It's insane.
Musical.
Easter's like, I think, 1 to like 2 weeks away at most. Crazy.
It's the last day of March.
I'm pretty sure it's the first Sunday 31st. Of April this year. I could be wrong on that.
I think it's the very last day of March, 31st, because this coming Sunday, as of this recording,
oh
is
my
Palm
God,
Sunday.
It is March 31st. Is Easter Sunday. I've been off by a week. Yep. Well, y'all have that to look forward to.
Hope your Easters were good for all you Catholic folk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't know when Russian Orthodox Easter is. I don't know what the timeline is. I don't think it's the same day. I'm pretty sure it's not. I'm going to stop talking about religions I don't know about now.
Damn. According to my... I'm looking through my calendar because why not? My Apple calendar tells me that March 25th is Holi, which is a Hindu holiday, I believe. So by the time you listen to this, it would have passed. So happy Holi. I hope you had fun throwing colored cornstarch at each other and celebrating I don't actually know what Holi is about. I know it has something to do with light and probably like good versus evil or something like that. Sounds cool. Always looks like a fun holiday every year in our neighborhoods. So I hope you had a good Holi. Yeah. Shout out to TTR, by the way.
Oh, right. Shout out to TTR.
And all of our patrons, actually. We appreciate all of you. But without further ado, it's the best part of the night. Every episode, every time. Unless Brendan is here and he's out here to spoil our fun. It's the Garb Gab.
Time to gab some garb up, baby. All right. I've got the bag and I know I had you reach in last time. So this time I'm gonna fall on my own sword and reach to the garb gab. Just
you put
so
swords
you know,
in there?
I was gonna say, not a figure of speech. I put actual swords in here.
Oh my god.
So I'm gonna reach in and pull out hopefully my favorite sword and we'll see what we I pulled out my favorite sword. It's just a pen. It's the pen that I use to write all of the garb gabs on the actual swords, because the pen is mightier than the sword.
I'm pretty sure that's just an elaborate excuse to say I left my pen in the bag and this is the first thing I grabbed, so we're rolling with it.
Quiet you. I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, this is my favorite pen. I mean sword, because I know that written on it is a recommendation from me.
Ooh.
So I'm here to tell you about, and the listeners, about a mobile game.
Mobile
that
game.
I recently picked back up. Yes, a mobile game. Not a gacha game, though.
Interesting.
It's a game that I played a number of years ago at the recommendation of, it's a recommendation, in fact, of our good friend of the show, Juan. He made me privy to this because back then there was an especially emerging genre of deck building roguelikes after the release of, oh, it's killing me. What was the PC one? Slay the Spire. Yes, thank you.
God, I want to play that so bad.
I don't know actually if Slay the Spire was the first to do this, but it was, I think, I want to say the most popular one, especially at the time. And so we ended up finding, or he ended up finding, this mobile game called Night of the Full Moon, which is actually a deck building roguelike, like I said. But it centers around the fable or the children's tale of Little Red Riding Hood. You play as Little Red Riding Hood, and she has all these different archetypes and classes that she can be, like a basic warrior or an archer or a thief. There are expansions of where there's a werewolf. The werewolf is actually, so like in the game, she has like a little friend. I don't know if that's part of Red Riding Hood lore. I'm not up on that stuff, but she has a friend, and actually the werewolf class is the friend turning into the werewolf. But there's also like apothecary, which they just dropped a couple of new ones. One's a mechanic and another is like a soul whisperer or something. Apparently also, so the reason I'm recommending it is because Juan himself went back to the game recently and was like, dude, you got to play. There's a bunch of new cool shit. So I re-downloaded it recently and started playing a bit, and there's a bunch of new cool shit there. And it's just as fun as it was before to just hop in and like knock out a round in like 20 to 30 minutes. So if you've ever been a fan of the deck building roguelike genre and haven't seen or checked out Night of the Full Moon, go ahead and do it. It's pretty fun.
Nice. This is, to say the least, this is not the recommendation I was ever expecting from you or anyone at this point. So that's pretty cool.
I got to mix it up every now and then.
Nice. I can't wait for my recommendation.
What?
Because if I...
We went super wholesome last time. Had to bring it back down, you know?
If I hopefully remember the thing I wish to recommend when my turn comes around, we will come back to the wholesome. I just hope I don't forget it in like however many months it's going to take to get to me.
I'm
probably going to forget.
Who's after me? Devin's after me, and then it's you. So yeah, probably see you in like 4 months.
Here's to 4 months from now, me. I hope I remember this current thought.
Keep a sticky note on your desk or something to remind you.
Don't let
it fall off.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's it. That's everything. So do the thing, Justin. Thank you for listening to our show tonight, today, tomorrow, whenever you listen to it. If you wish to follow us on social media, we are available on Instagram and Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it now, at Panda Sightings. You can send us emails like Sam did today at pandasightings@gmail.com. You know, I'm going to pause real quick. We got an email today from someone who sent two emails. The first email was, hey, is this One Piece of the Lime? I just want to be sure. And that tickled me because I'm like, we have a pretty unique email address. You know, it's always good to double check you spell it right or whatever. But I'm like, imagine there's just some other panda sightings out there in the world with like a similar enough email address where like a single typo could bring you to a whole new other community or whatever.
Oh, man.
But to that emailer, you got the right one. I hope you saw my reply. But yeah, it's our email address. We have community Discord. If you wish to join that, it's in the link tree of our all our stuff, or bios, or episode descriptions, all that good stuff. Not sure why it turned to an Oklahoman.
Yeah, that was weird. Don't remind me about the movie anymore than I already need to.
I'm going to be real. That sounded like an awful experience for you, and I was only listening to your review of it.
Well, the episode was like kind of fun to record. I had a good time shitting on it with Brendan. Watching the movie was a chore and a half.
I believe it. Yeah, check out our other podcast, Panda View. I don't know how many of you already do that, but like we make good stuff on there, I promise.
Again, by this point, Iron Claw will be out, and me and Justin did that
one. I'm excited for that one.
That one was one of my favorite ones that we've done in recent memory.
Yeah, I agree. So yeah, check out Panda View if you haven't. We appreciate that support. Speaking of support, if you wish to support us financially, like either Twigo, Taco, or Rin, or any of our other patrons out there, we have a Patreon, also in our links and bios and all that good stuff. We appreciate any support you can offer us, despite our lack of content on there recently. We're just all busy. But if you also wish to financially support us less directly and get something out of it, we have a merch shop on redbubble.com. We have tons of cool stickers brought to you by our community member / resident artist, Panda. Panda, if you're listening to this, we greatly appreciate you. I love, 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 love our new logo for One Piece of the Lime. It is so good. It is so good.
Wow.
Chef's kiss all around the table, all around the kitchen. Anything else I'm missing? We have a YouTube channel. If you prefer to listen to the podcast on YouTube, or just maybe you want to listen to it twice and now you got a second or third platform to listen to us on, I don't know, pat our stats. We appreciate it. It does something for us, I think. Yeah, am I missing anything else? I think that's it.
Dude, we don't make any money off that channel, so it's just for view counts.
It's just there to make the gamer number go up and make me just drip drop a little bit of dopamine in the back of my brain. So appreciate it. But yeah, that's it. I think I got everything. Did it all right. So thank you for listening.
Coolio Julio.
Yeah. How do we close out the show?
Usually we just like maybe make a callback to the beginning of the episode where we did something funny, but I don't think we did this time really. So I guess we just say sayonara.